Dumelang Thobela, hello and welcome to the SL Cabinet, your go-to weekly news wrap-up. My name is Gwena Mashale and I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Herman Molloy.
Hi, guys.
So, guys, new week, same energy. We're bringing you the biggest stories, the wildest debates, and those catchy headlines. So let's dive right into it. I think the first thing, if that's got everybody kind of happy, is the VAT reversal. So obviously, not only has this caused some sort of celebration, but there has been some strife within the government of national unity. So the news broke out from National Treasury on Thursday, in the early hours of Thursday morning, but it was technically broken out by the Sunday Times on Wednesday evening, right? Let's just get the facts straight. So the first thing that we just need to obviously say is that VAT reversal no longer on the table. It's been wiped, no longer there, right? But this comes as political parties are basically saying that, no, we did it. It's because of our victory. While others are saying, no, but we did it as a coalition. We did it all together. I think we can literally distinguish who said what in that mess. But let's name, right, for your guys' sake. So the Democratic Alliance as well, well, actually just them, they did a media briefing around 8:30 in the morning on Thursday, basically coming out to say that we did this. It's our victory. We've been saying it. We've been saying it from the get-go that we don't want it. And we even took it to court. And that's why Helen even went on to say that she even was surprised to get a phone call from the finance minister's legal team to basically saying that they want to settle out of court. Let's take a listen
to
that clip.
The VAT increase should be interdicted, and why the minister had made the announcement in terms of an unconstitutional power allocated to him under the VAT Act, and secondly, why the process by which the Finance Portfolio Committee had supposedly adopted the fiscal framework when that proposal was actually never before the committee, and why an unlawful outcome and irrational outcome of the Finance Portfolio Committee had landed before Parliament as a whole, which adopted a fiscal framework that had unprocedurally and unlawfully and irrationally emerged out of the Portfolio Committee and the Standing Committee and the NCOP. The arguments were so clearly framed that I have no doubt that the Minister's legal team went back to him on Wednesday morning, the day after our court case, and said, it looks as if it is going to be inevitable that the 0.5% VAT increase that takes effect on the 1st of May could well be set aside by the court. And in that context, it seemed better for the minister to concede before he was perceived to have been forced to by the outcome of the DA's court challenge. And that is what has clearly happened in the last week. Now, it's also crucial from the DA's perspective that we set out these circumstances, because there's no doubt that the minister, in trying to save face, will seek to present this as the result of his discussions with the smaller parties. The issue that the ANC fears more than anything else is that the public will come to understand the extent of the DA's muscle in holding the balance of power and the impact that we can make both through the political process and then the legal process if the political process proves impermeable as it did this time.
So essentially, Helen is basically saying that at the end of the day, the DA is the one that won this victory. It's no one else. They were not even part of the somewhat talks. It was all by their works, despite the EFF also being there in court with them, right? So, and also obviously adding on to that, Helen went on to say that, no, you know what? Even if we did call for Enoch to stand down, he wouldn't stand down. She even went as far as saying, you know what? This is even an embarrassment for a finance minister. And honestly, if it was a quote-unquote normal democracy, he would not still be in cabinet. So, Herman, what are your thoughts on Helen's words before we go on to the other what happened the rest of the day?
Okay. So for me, it's two things. Helen says we are the one who won this thing. Mm. We got an email to say we want to settle out of court.
Yeah.
But then when you look at the facts, is that both EFF and DA were in court.
Mm.
So why is it them only who received a letter to say we are settling out of court?
Mm.
I'm not discrediting what they did taking the matter to court,
yeah,
which is something that always works for us in a certain way, because the court will say, okay, take the matter back to parliament and go discuss it,
yeah,
which means the VAT increase will be halted at that,
yeah,
moment.
Mm.
Again, we might give them a credit to a certain extent,
yeah,
for that job. They took the case to the matter to court.
Mm.
But then for them to say, yeah, it's all us, or it's misinformation,
mm-hmm,
and yeah, you're being disingenuous. And also, it's funny how everyone wants to claim the victory of this thing.
Mm.
Yeah, they all played the part.
Gok
Helen said so much.
I think she did really say, yeah, a lot. She took her time,
yeah,
from 8:30 all the way, guys. When I tell you I was like in that briefing, from 8:30 all the way to actually like 9:30, the woman was speaking for a long time. But anyway, let's move on to what happened after that, right? So obviously, when the news broke out, the ANC also released their own statement saying that they will also be having a media briefing with other political parties that they had actually spoken to about the VAT. This includes, I think, the IFP, the Action SA, your BUSA, all of these small political parties that contributed to this, what can I say, VAT reversal. So they had a media briefing around 10 a.m. and it started with obviously the first statement joined together that was read by Uhlengiwe, and she was basically saying how no, they did this, they saw that it was not good for the people, that they actually heard the people's voices, and they decided to come together to talk about it. And I think if we've been kind of following the VAT discussion, we've all known what's been going on within the political space. Many of these political parties have been hit a lot. I mean, let's look at the Action SA. I think Action SA has been hit a lot about how their leader specifically is not really that smart in certain negotiations. They have been taking a lot of hits. So Herman Mashaba went onto the podium yesterday and spoke about how not only were they fighting, but people still did not look at them in a bright light, and they were still a slander campaign. Let's take a listen to him saying that.
Action SA is not a member of the GNU. We respectfully declined the invitation in favor of being a constructive opposition. We said then, as we say now, that Action SA will lend its support to the government when doing so to save South Africans without holding that back. And we said that would be the point of opposition spear when a tough opposition is required. Over time, Action SA has become increasingly concerned about the unprecedented budget crisis that has developed under the GNU. Even from the opposition benches, it was clear that our national budget was being held hostage by certain parties within the GNU to negotiate about matters that had absolutely nothing to do with the budget. Action SA respect the rights of parties in the GNU to negotiate. This is, after all, a cornerstone of a healthy coalition. However, one thing must be made clear. At no point can South Africans or their democratic institution be asked to pay for cheap political point scoring aspirations. As the famous African proverb says, when the elephant fight, it is the grass.
So I think in the gist of everything, everybody at that table, your Ryzen Zanzi Usongezo Zibi, also stated at the beginning that why are we making it a political party's interest? Why are we not focusing on what the problem is? This is the problem. Let's move on with it. Other people now want to make it as a whole political scheme and a whole political favor and wanting it to use it as an extortion, he says. But he says that this was a matter to free not only the minister, but as well as the people of the country.
It's quite interesting what happened this past few weeks.
Mm.
For me, it's like, obviously, the ANC took the small parties to say, okay, Let's vote for the fiscal budget framework so that we can pass the budget and then we'll deal with the VAT after. So in that sense, ANC won and everyone was like, okay, let's focus on VAT increase. We don't agree with this thing and everything. But again, I think we should relook at what the framework says outside the VAT thing, because you might find, okay, sharp, these people might actually have voted for a budget that's going to kill us anyway. Yeah. And also, the whole thing, DA wanting ANC to scrap Bella Bill, NHI, I think we are getting a sense of what DA represent, because you can't be using people's pain or suffering to gain your own. Yeah, but then, it was quite interesting how it played out. It's quite interesting even today, yesterday and today, because everyone wants to claim the victory. Literally. I saw Malema posted saying, thank you, Tembeka and Ngubakai. It's quite interesting, the whole VAT situation, because you have like five things that the DA does not agree with with the ANC, but they're saying, I'm not going.
I mean, they're the most stubborn party I've ever met in my life. Considering the fact that I think the most thing that confused a lot of people is that you went as far, because when Usongizo was speaking about extortion, I'm like, so they went as far as actually leveraging this whole VAT thing in order for them to get what they wanted.
I mean, that was raised by UU minister a couple of weeks ago to say, we received actually a communication from DA to say, if you scrap this, then we'll vote with you.
But it's like, it doesn't make any sense. But anyway, guys, I mean, with the VAT reversal, right, it's a good thing, like I said at the beginning, but it does come at a shortfall of about 75 billion rand over the medium term, which means that there is going to be some cuts within the national budget. So Mr. Enoch has been given 30 days to rework the budget. And that means extensive cuts, guys. I mean, 75 billion is a lot. And that means most of the essential industries, well, departments or sectors, we'll be looking at major cuts, like your health, your education, your security, all in general are looking at cuts. And we spoke to some economists and some unions within this space, and they were talking about how most of these departments already have cuts. They already worsened. They already hired, already in difficult states. They cannot afford any more. So what are your thoughts, Herman? I completely agree with the economists. We can't afford any more cuts to our security, to our municipalities, and anything like that.
I foresee a disaster. I mean, we already know that the budget for education is already scrambling. Now they have introduced that they want to hire 200,000, I think, teachers assistant. We're going to face a situation whereby the department says, we don't have money to pay them. Or they're going to retrench more teachers. They're going to say, go home, we can't afford you. I mean, in health, it's always a problem in South Africa. I mean, it's either they are failing to pay service providers or they are failing to hire more doctors, whereby you find when you go to a public hospital, you find one doctor or two doctors, and you ask yourself, this hospital is supposed to cover like hundreds of community members, but we have one doctor or two doctors. So it's going to be a disaster. I don't know what's the plan, but we'll see.
For that,
I agree with the economists that are saying that it's going to be
a challenge. He's going to have to, like, I don't even know how he's going to get work over this, because 75 billion is a lot of money. Yeah, guys, but hey, let's hope for the best. Let's hope I can't even say what's going to happen, guys. Let's see what happens. Moving on to the next topic, guys. So Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky made a historic visit to South Africa, right, with obviously to meet the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, in Pretoria to discuss international support for Ukraine amidst its ongoing conflict with Russia. I think there was a small briefing. The president also spoke on the matter, as well as Zelensky. They shared their two viewpoints. Let's take a listen to those clips.
We are pleased that our ministers have held discussions amongst themselves to strengthen the various areas in which we can cooperate between our two respective countries. We acknowledge the significant strides that Ukraine has taken, and in particular, President Zelensky, to expand relations with the African continent. We note the provision of grain in areas of food, the expansion of agricultural cooperation, and the opening up of the grain hub to the port of Mombasa in Kenya. These are direct outcomes of discussions that were held when we visited Kyiv in June 2023 as part of the African Peace Initiative. Our engagement today was an opportunity to discuss our shared interest in advancing peace, security, stability, and sustainable development on the continent, in Ukraine, and across the world. We have reinforced our common commitment to the respect of the rule of law in international relations, multilateralism, the central role that the United Nations plays in global governance, and the maintenance of global peace and security. South Africa is deeply concerned about the continuing conflict in Ukraine, the continuing loss of civilian lives, the damage to critical infrastructure, and deteriorating humanitarian situation. South Africa believes that the only path to peace is through diplomacy.
Meetings with opinion leaders, with studentship, we are thankful for your support of Ukraine, for you sharing our understanding that this war has to be ended as soon as possible. This was our primary topic to discuss with President Ramaphosa when he had been on a visit to Ukraine. I remember him saying those very important words about the need to reach a ceasefire as soon as possible, an unconditional ceasefire. I agreed to it. I said that everything depends on Russia's intention and desire, because it is in Moscow where they have to make a decision on silence, making relevant orders to the Russian army. You know that this year, the Eastern Time, we had this opportunity of a ceasefire. We were absolutely ready for it. We acted in a mirror way, responding only to Russian attacks. Ukraine defended itself. Unfortunately, after that, Russia renewed its assaults on the front line, the strikes against the civilian infrastructure. Today, we discussed with the president the importance to unite global efforts to have this aggregate pressure on Russia for the sake of peace, to stop the war. We also discussed the importance of the G20 level. South Africa is presiding in G20, and G20's role in the defense of peace can be much greater. We strongly count on that. It is also very important, our bilateral agenda. Ukraine is keenly interested in energy security matters.
However, obviously, during this whole process, Zelensky had to cut his visit short and rush back to Ukraine following a devastating Russian missile that attacked one of the cities. I would be butchering the name of this place, guys, Kyiv, which resulted in at least eight fatalities as well as 70 injuries. Hemi, what are your thoughts on this matter?
For me, I like to say, I respect Cyril Ramaphosa, President Cyril Ramaphosa, when it comes to international affairs. The way he's handling this whole international affairs thing, I mean, at the same time, he spoke to Trump, and you know, our friendship with Trump with the U.S. At the moment is not that great, up to standard. Yeah. And he also spoke to Putin of Russia while this Ukraine guy is coming, and that shows... We are not taking side, but we we are making a difference in people's lives because we are starting a conversation between the two countries, which is Ukraine and Russia. At the same time, we're also meddling and helping our friendship, boost our friendship with the U.S. We might say we don't like Trump, or people might say that, but we, to a certain extent, we need a USA as much as they need us. So it's quite interesting how President Cyril Ramaphosa is handling the whole thing. And, like, there's no lot of noise to say, yeah, but then, it's calm. Like, you don't even recognize, okay, it's happening.
I think that's the one thing that I think we've been discussing, how the president has some has a sort of, you know, he's a charming man in a way that he can speak. He can really negotiate very well. I think we've seen it. But my thing is that I'm also kind of concerned at... We as South Africa, we like really playing this middle field guy, like this middleman in between these countries, many countries. And even with now, with our ambassador, the ambassador that was currently chosen to go represent us in America, there's also still like a lot of debate about the chosen person. I mean, there was a history about around him and how he made crude comments regarding America and regarding Trump, Zwip as well. So now, he's now the ambassador. And it also, you know, there's that question as well as to, does the president understand that sending this man over there? There are some people who argue that, no, it can actually be a bomb. It may not work well. Whereas the president is saying, I have control of everything. Don't you worry. Things are running smoothly. In fact, I'm having conversations with Zelensky and Putin at simultaneous times, and if things go wrong, I can be able to speak to them and negotiate. But there are people who are concerned, South Africans who are concerned, that why don't you sometimes focus on your house? Because some people are saying that they're crying. Many residents always cry that we are going through our own problems.
But then with me, I totally get it in a way. We manufacture goods, but we don't... we manufacture them from the beginning, but we don't... process them until their end product. And obviously, if USA say, no, we can't take your gold, which they cannot say, but I'm making for instance, it's going to take us a while to have machines that will process the gold, make it a ring. So we need those people as much as they need us, because we have the materials. So trying to build a good relationship with them benefits us also, in a way. It helps us in a way. Although it's not an ideal situation, I know someone will say, but Hemeni, why can't we do it ourselves?
Yes.
I mean, we have seen our government. So, yeah, we actually need a good relationship with international countries because that's where we export our raw materials. And with Umnebi is just going there to say, no, there's no genocide in South Africa. He's not actually the ambassador. Yeah. President is still thinking about the ambassadors. Yeah, now he's just going to put a South African version to the U.S. president. Which I don't care who goes, because Umnebi said what he wanted to say. I mean, we live in South Africa. We have freedom of speech. Definitely. He said what he saw was fit at the time. Whether Trump likes it or not, it's his baby to nurse. That one, he should deal with it.
Yeah.
We are not going there to say we are trying to build a relationship with Trump, although he's the head of state.
Yeah.
But we are going there to say, actually, South Africa, there's no white genocide. The land expropriation thing. Yes, we have an expropriation to rectify what was done wrong in the past. So for me, who goes there, it's none of my my business. But with ambassadors, yes, because they represent a country to a certain extent.
But guys, you know what? I think let's leave the president to do what he does best when it comes to the international affairs. He rocks it. I think we've seen him. We've seen the videos. He speaks well. He knows how to get them in order. So, guys, moving on to another thing, guys. I think, you know, when it comes to hospitals in this country, they are always going through the most. So recently, a fire broke out at the Tembisa Hospital Accident and Emergency Unit on Saturday, and the Gauteng Department of Health basically confirmed that all the patients were safely evacuated. However, The Public Service Association stated that the incident is a symptom of long-standing infrastructure failures, and there have been warnings that have been ignored that have left the hospital workers and patients in danger. Herman, thoughts before we dive further in?
So I'm not sure if you're going to touch on it, but on Wednesday, they experienced another fire.
Yes.
Yeah, it goes with infrastructure and maintenance. Mm. You know, once you don't maintain your things, obviously you're going to face the consequences.
Mm.
So I think, how many times have you went to a public
hospital
or any infrastructure and you saw people like trying to renovate or something? It barely happens.
Yeah. Definitely.
Once there's something or once there's money that needs to be chowed, and then you'll see a project taking 2 months or then so that's it. So I think, Joe, it's not even hospitals only. A lot of infrastructure in South Africa needs to be revamped because it's bad.
And this is, do not find this interesting how this happens right, not obviously right after, but I think like a month after the Health Ombudsman did a whole report on how the hospitals in South Africa need maintenance. They are lacking maintenance. There's no proper order. And not only that, but there's no management as well within these hospitals. And they even say that it's a waiting disaster because you're constantly being told that when it breaks, that's only when you want to fix it. Why don't you maintain it throughout?
And now it's like we're getting hints but we're ignoring them. For me, we should just close that hospital, find a way to revamp it. And deal with patients at other facilities.
Yeah.
Because it burns. Obviously there's damage that is being done to that hospital, and then it burns again. There's another damage. And when you go there, you try to patch, and then when you patch also you forget about other areas.
That's true.
Gonna be a disaster.
But I think with the Tembisa Hospital, I think we can also reference to the fact that the Tembisa Hospital has been something that's always been in the news. It's been always been I don't want to say an eyesore, but it's always in the news for something bad always happening. I mean, the last one was with the assassination of what's the woman's name? The one who did the. Oh my gosh, I may also stand to be corrected on this one. But the one who wanted to the whistleblower man.
I don't remember. I just know that they have CEO problems there.
They do have CEO problems, but I think I will circle back to whistleblower guys. I may stand to be corrected on that one. But I think infrastructure in the country is bad. It needs to be looked at, not only at the hospitals, but all throughout. It's just something that we need to stop being reaction. We need to not react. We need to be proactive. Because you can't always, when something happens, now you want to fix it, now you want to deal with it. That's not how it works. That's not how it works, guys. Okay, guys, moving on to a much, I don't want to say lighter note, but I think something that the country is kind of winning over. So I recently did a whole tour with the BMA officials, right? The Border Management Authority took us on a full-on tour following the Easter Long Run operation. And while we were there, they showed us what they do on the ground, their feats and everything. And basically, I would like to say, guys, with a force of 2,600 people and looking over how many, I think more than 70 borders or border posts, I think they're doing quite an adequate piece of job with the little that resources they have, though. I mean, recently they did get a few more technological equipments. They got your drones. They also got your mobile cameras so that they can be able to monitor better and do their job better. But while we were there, we also witnessed some sort of a maneuvering of Zimbabwean people obviously crossing over the Limpopo River to South Africa in makeshift boats. So while we were speaking to the Commissioner Michael Masipiato, he told us that this is something that occurs a lot at the Beitbridge border, and they do try to destroy the boats, but they never can get it right. Let's take a listen to that clip.
particular operation, we can confirm that over 1,000 individuals had been arrested just here in Bed Brick Border Post who were trying to either exit or enter the country illegally. So those people, as we speak, they were fairly deported back into the Zimbabwean side on the basis of this particular, you know, particular work. In terms of the other things, for example, if we talk about the movement of cargo, we've been doing an average of between 2,200 in terms of the export cargo, and we did around 2,600 in terms of the import cargo.
So essentially, at the end of the day, they are facilitators on the ground. They facilitate, or how can I put this? They smuggle people over the country, over the Limpopo River, into the country, and spread, and obviously deliver them where they want to go. And they do this at an amount of at least 300 rand to 250. But I think the one thing that we can take away is that the Border Management Authority is trying to come up with a new strategy to guard the border, but as well as also apprehend the facilitators on the ground. Herman, what are your thoughts?
For me, it's beyond border management control.
Mm.
What needs to be done or relooked at, it's the whole deportation thing. Because it can't be right that we are deporting like 5,000 people in a day, for example. And then when you look 30 minutes later, they also trying to jump back to South Africa while you deported them like 30 minutes ago. So it's something that needs to be relooked. Like county head state, president, they should sit down and speak about this thing. I mean, if you come to South Africa, you should. I mean, if you're a refugee, you should stay. I'm a refugee. And if you are an asylum seeker, you should stay.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to just say, you know what, I need to go to South Africa today. And just like they did come to South Africa.
Yeah, but I do get what you mean, because when we were there, many of the guards told us that half of the time when we deport these people, 30 minutes later, you find the same person again. You even bump into them when you're knocking off at work. And it's like, they said it's a vicious cycle, because you deport, they come back. You deport, they come back. Although I think his name is Peter Mpilo. That's another commissioner there. He also spoke to us about how they do have a network for people who have been deported before, but they catch them again. He says that those people, they are arrested. However, I think I failed to ask him, how often do you guys actually arrest repeated offenders?
But they get arrested, they appear in court, and then they are deported again to back to their country. So it's a useless cycle that needs to be relooked about.
Yeah.
And what's actually disappointing, I'm not advocating for crime or anything, but these people come from Zimbabwe or wherever they're coming from. And I'm not trying to give crime any nation. But you get here, people are unemployed. You're also unemployed, and people introduce you to crime. That's how crime increases in South Africa. And actually, what is disappointing is that you find the taxi drivers who are actually smuggling these people into South Africa. Like, you know, we are struggling with illegal foreigners in South Africa or undocumented migrants in South Africa, but you still bring more people to South Africa.
It doesn't make any sense, eh?
Yeah, it's quite disappointing.
It definitely is bad. But hi, guys. Hey, that's all for this week's news wrap. Remember that you can find our latest podcast, review, and subscribe for free on Iono FM, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. You can also find us or follow us on all social media platforms at Sowetan Live. This podcast is a Times Live production, and our producer is temporary for today is Tabo. Don't forget, you can also have a listen to our other podcast, Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horns, Business Day Spotlight, The Indigenous Corner with Gogo Zipo, Deeply Rooted. Thank you for tuning in. Join us again next week for more updates on the bigger stories from me, Gwena Mashale, and your co-host, Herman Molloy. Bye.
Ciao.